assume nothing when you see this role. Proclaim to the masses while I make them say, assume the best when you just don't know that the places I'm caught is untraditional.
Let's get ready to what? Rumble! It's the Zero Hour Podcast. This is my Vegas voice because I'm going to Vegas next week. Okay, so it is your co-host. What do they call me? They call me Mark Fietz, and I'm sitting across. I'm actually sitting today because I busted up my ankle running last week. So I'm sitting across from
Christine Chapman, your host.
With the most. And on the phone, his name sounds like he should be like a rich boy from Connecticut. Say hello, Braxton.
Braxton Wood, welcome.
Thank you. I've never even been to Connecticut, so now I got to go check it out.
Thank God. Like, with the name Braxton. Okay, so we need to dig in. But with the name Braxton, I think you should be like Thurston Howell from Gilligan's Island, wearing an ascot, and you should have a bit of a, you know, this is how I talk.
No, but Braxton is like probably the most down-to-earth person that I have met and felt instantly connected to. Because Braxton, we've only spoken by text and spoken once, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, what did you guys mean?
Mills knows Bills.
Oh.
Mills introduced us.
Oh, so do you work with Mills as well?
We're actually in a little mastermind group together.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
All right. So hang on. I got to get into the origin of the name. Hang on a second.
Dude, okay.
Where
are you from?
Where are you from?
I'm originally from Northern Utah.
Oh, wait a second. You just opened up a whole can of worms, bro.
Okay, so.
Holy shit. Let's unpack. Wait. How many brothers and sisters?
Oh, I'm the oldest of six.
The oldest of six. Hang on, Christine. Hang on. Same mom and dad at all six?
Correct. Well, actually, one's adopted, but yeah.
So. Okay.
Depending
on
how you look at it, but yeah.
And are you Mormon?
Yes.
You are.
So what does that mean?
I am.
So you're Mormon, and did you go away on a mission?
I did.
You did?
I did.
Okay,
you need to
explain for Mark. My brother, when we lived in South Korea many years ago, my brother attended an international school, and one of his best friends was from New Zealand and Mormon. And so we learned about what it is to be a mm-hmm. Mormon and to go away on your, you know, on your mission trips and
need,
all of that stuff.
We
so
need, you need to explain. All of that.
Okay.
Okay. So listen, I'm like half a Jew from New York. I don't even really know what that means. But it's my way, because my mom is Jewish and my dad is Protestant, and I was raised honestly confused. So I think there's stereotypes of Mormons, right? Can you tell us like your story and what that means, and what is his mission? What is like this first time?
Okay, so we're gonna let Braxton unpack it because he's the authority in the room.
Go.
So it's funny. That's actually how I ended up in Idaho. Is I served my mission in the Boise area, and then I just fell in love with Idaho. So I went back home. And by that time, I was living in Arizona. So I was born and raised in northern Utah, but I spent about half my life in Phoenix.
Nice.
So it was from Phoenix that I left for my mission. But yeah, so served in the Boise area, went back home to Phoenix, met my wife. We had a couple kids.
Wait, rewind. Wait a second, B. I'm just going to call you B. All right, is that okay?
Sure.
Can I call you B?
You would be the first one.
Okay.
He's what's always the first one to do something.
What's up, B. Woods? So, Braxton, dude, you need to listen to more episodes. You got to hear my antics. You got to unpack that. So, all right, Northern Utah, is that Provo? Like, where is that?
No, so for just a little bit north of Salt Lake City.
Okay. All right. So, explain to us in the Northeast the principles behind, is it Mormonism? Is that how you say it?
So that's what society likes to refer to it as. We as a faith, as a church, don't use that term. That's a term that the news came up with or something at some point.
Okay.
And I'm oversimplifying a little bit, but that's the gist of it.
Okay.
So the true name of our church is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yes.
Everyone's probably heard of it, so that's how we refer to ourselves. Yeah, but I don't know. That's it. I was born and raised in the church for the most part. I have a lot of pioneer heritage. One of my ancestors, if you know anything about Joseph Smith, one of my ancestors was knew Joseph Smith personally, all that type of stuff. So
my
heritage.
Joseph Smith was the founder of the church, correct?
Correct.
Of the Latter-day Saints.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And was he the person who wrote the Book of Mormon?
He didn't write it. He translated it.
He translated it.
Did he write the play on Broadway as well?
No.
All right. Hang on. Okay, so as a non-religious half a Jew from New York, what are the principles of being a Mormon? What is that? What are the guiding principles? Like, can you help me understand that?
Yeah, I think it's just very, in a lot of ways, a lot of people don't think that our faith is Christian, but Jesus is in the name of our church. So I don't know how they come to that conclusion. So I mean, honestly, we're in a lot of ways, we're not all that different from most Christian faiths. We believe in God, we believe in Jesus Christ and in the Holy Ghost, and we just try to live by the conservative, you know, morals and principles of the gospel, Ten Commandments, and it's not all that different. I don't know. I can unpack it way more if you want to, but that's how I look at it.
Okay, but you don't, my understanding, just from knowing Ruel Newman, who is the only Mormon that I was ever friends with, Ruel did not grow up drinking soda, for example. Is that correct?
Do you drink soda?
Yes, I can. I choose, for health reasons, I choose not to, but that's not a church thing.
Do you drink alcohol?
A lot of people, nope, I do not.
Ever?
Never. I've never touched it in my life.
How about cannabis?
No.
So is that part of the church's teaching, if you will?
A lot of, if teaching is the word you want to use, we view it as a commandment not to partake in, you know, alcohol and coffee and things like that. That's something that the church in our faith is commonly known for.
Okay.
Cannabis is an interesting thing. I'm not the authority to get too much into it, but our church a few years back released some sort of public statement. And they even, someone would need to look it up because I need to make sure that I'm not speaking out of turn. But basically they said, you know, anyone that participated in medical marijuana, for example, would have no reason to lose any standing in the church or anything like that. So,
okay.
Yep. So cannabis is a little bit more, some people might view it as a gray area, but I view it as something different than the alcohol and the coffee type of thing.
Okay. So then the other thing I would like to understand, because I believe there was an HBO show that featured a Mormon community, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is polygamy something that is sanctioned by the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints?
Nope. Everyone has a misunderstanding. And again, I'm not speaking from any place of authority on this.
No, of course not.
But at a very high level, the misconception that happens with those shows is that they're not actually members of our church. They're members of offshoot churches, just like how, you know, we have the Protestants and the Lutherans and the Catholics.
Yes.
But, right?
Yes.
It's the same thing, just they happen to be an offshoot of our church, and they have their own views on things and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, Mormons tend to have big families.
They tend to.
So is there no, like, is it sort of like the Catholic Church in terms of, like, is there something against birth control?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
No, my wife and I have used birth control, maybe this is too much, that's maybe too TMI, I don't mind. Okay. But no, we've used it for our family planning ourselves. There's nothing against it at all.
Okay, great. All right, okay, so.
B, you have completely changed who I thought I was going to talk to with just your first name. Like, I thought New England, Ascot, Westport douchey, you know.
Braxton, because his name is Braxton.
Correct.
Braxton
Wood. I can see it.
Listen, and I saw a picture of you. You know, he's a handsome lad.
He is a handsome young man.
Yeah.
I'm flattered now.
he's a young man, but Braxton has got, okay, dude. So I gotta ask a couple questions, man. So I know you are, in my opinion, based upon what I know so far, are like a one percenter, right? So, what I mean by that is that your formal education is limited, but you have managed to evolve yourself, right, into a business of coaching, right? Executives, people who are highly educated.
Origin story, like, how did this happen? Zero hour. We're right there, right? Are you with us? You asked the question, right?
Shit, I got ahead.
Yes.
I got ahead of myself, didn't I?
Yes, you did get ahead of yourself. I'm just calling you out on it because now we're digging in with Braxton. You ready?
We're only 15 minutes
it's
in.
It's okay. He's got an amazing story.
All right, B, go ahead.
Okay. So we're switching gears to the education piece. Is that what I'm understanding?
Your story, man.
Your story,
okay.
Your 0 hour, that pivotal, like, oh my God, this is what I'm doing. This is who I am.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. So, and granted, this probably, there's a sliver of this that ties in with the whole faith thing and things like that, because I'm a product of homeschooling. So there's a fair number of, I shouldn't say the majority by any means, but a lot of people in my church, there's a group of people in my church that also tend to homeschool as well.
Okay.
Do you homeschool your own children as well?
We absolutely do.
Really?
Yep.
That is amazing. I just want to say, just as somebody who has spent her whole career in education, homeschooling has certainly evolved. But like when you think about the days of homeschooling and having a parent or both parents sort of doing the work of teaching, supervising, managing, all of it, I couldn't do it. Even as somebody who's devoted my whole life to education, like that is a huge feat of patience, dedication, planning and organization. Like, I don't even know how you and your wife have a job.
Wait.
Jobs.
I gotta ask questions about homeschooling. Okay, so I'm gonna equate it to, so these kids who were born during COVID, right? In the first 3 years, all they saw was people with masks, right? And it was kind of weird for them, and that's really all they know. And they are, and this is where I'm going to kind of equate it back. They missed something because they were born during this period. When you homeschool, don't kids need to, like, yell, scream, and play and build those personality characteristics as well that they can, quote-unquote, only get in a traditional...
socialized, quote-unquote, environment?
Yeah. So, like, does one take away from the other? Have you thought about that, Braxton, and your wife in homeschooling your kids? And did it affect you when you were home? So it doesn't feel like it now because you're as personable as the day is long. But I wonder if a kid who's supposed to be an extrovert becomes an introvert because of a homeschooling or a lifestyle choice.
Yeah. So this is what I'm all about. Even in my coaching, is like I'm so for challenging preconceived notions, right? And so, like,
you're a disruptor.
Conventionalism. I very much so.
Knew I liked you. Knew I liked you, B.
Who's to say when a kid is supposed to be one thing or another, right? Who's the one that determines that, really? Right?
Yep.
And then the other thing is I think there's a lot of, Mark, you're right, like, kids need to, and I'm actually a big proponent of this. I believe that our school system, and I can go way deep into this, but I believe our school system isn't perfectly designed, it's not perfectly set up to foster and nurture our children in their learning anyway. And so, there are better ways to do that, but I vehemently believe that children, the primary way that children need to learn is through play, right? But that in and of itself, we're sticking them in classrooms and they have to sit still for 6 hours a day, and then we give them a 15-minute break a couple times. So is that really accomplishing what they need to do? Like, to be able to run around and play, like you say, I agree. But they're not doing that very effectively, very efficiently in school anyway.
Wait, hang on. Sorry, go ahead. I got to cut in. Dude, legit.
So true.
So true. Makes sense. On the same page. At what point in a traditional education do you feel we fail our kids? So things like nursery school and stuff where they're still doing nap time and they have a little juice box and, like, you know, they're having crackers. Like, they're still kind of, like, in their shell. At what point do you feel the system really falls apart? And I, like you, B, I'm a disruptor too, and I'm all about shaking shit up, right? And and if it's broke, we need to fix it. And sometimes, you know, you need to be the voice of that. But the question is, where does the process break, in your opinion, from the traditional schooling rules? Like, at what age for kids?
Where does it break in terms of how the system is set up, or in terms of where, right from the beginning?
Right from the beginning.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
So, right from, and, like, I don't think I ever went to, like, nursery school, right? What is nursery school? Zero to 3 years old or something like that? Like, I think I went to, like, kindergarten. Like, and that's, like, my first school. So, it breaks at that point because it's like, a lot of things are messed up in the world. And we as parents try to unmess that up for our kids. But if we're born into a culture, into a system that may side-eye you because you're homeschooling, right? And that's a very real thing. Then, you know, you have to be strong in your beliefs, right? And listen, do your kids have friends who are not homeschooled? And do they kind of compare and contrast what a day is like?
Yeah, all their friends largely attend public school like typical kids.
Okay.
And do they... Like, how does...
Are they jealous of your kids?
Probably.
It's interesting. I don't know the answer to that, honestly.
Okay.
There's a chance. I think they would love the idea not to, like I said before, have to sit in a chair for a total of 5 to 6 hours a day.
That's true.
I'd imagine they're jealous of that.
I can barely sit in a chair for 5 or 6 minutes, honestly.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to steer us back. We need to steer back because we've got a story. Like, all Braxton has a serious story.
Braxton is all B. It's
He's
all
got
about
lots
stories.
Of stories. I didn't know that, Braxton, when we met. Like, there's so much stuff to unpack. Like, we could spend days talking to you. Okay, so you're homeschooled.
I was homeschooled. So what happened for me was I did attend grade school, so I wasn't homeschooled from the beginning.
Yep.
I attended grade school, and the catalyst for me was that I have a brother just 18 months younger than me. I was in fifth grade. He was in third grade. He was getting severely bullied, and my mom took him out of school before the year even ended because it was getting concerning.
Yep.
It was getting serious.
Yep.
And then the school year ended, and she came to me, and she's like, your brother's already home. We're already homeschooling him. You want to be homeschooled too? And like any intelligent, sane 11-year-old, I'm like, yes, take me out of school, right?
Yeah, of course. When do we start?
So, yeah. Right, exactly. So that's how it started for me. For me personally, when I share with people that I was homeschooled, I use the term very loosely, just so they kind of get a sense of what I did.
Yep.
My mother did not actually teach me at all. I did not receive instruction. What she did was, and this was partially my choice to some extent, but it was partially just my mom and, you know, whatever her choices were. She would buy me the textbooks or whatever, and I'd read through them and do the quizzes and so on, and then, you know, grade them and all that type of stuff.
And this was like by mail? Like, would you send your assignments away, have them graded, and sent back to you?
That came later when I was in high school.
Okay.
Wait. What do you mean send your assignments away?
So the only reason I know this is because I was working in the early days of homeschooling, probably around the time Braxton was being homeschooled. Mm-hmm. And I have some friends who have homeschooled. And generally speaking, what they do is they buy a curriculum, like a household will buy a curriculum. Mm-hmm. And students will have assignments and quizzes and whatnot that they do. And at least at the high school level and in some middle school programs, you could complete all of your lessons and mail them to the homeschool place where a teacher for each of the subjects would like correct and maybe even send you comments and send them back. Now it's all like a lot of it is online.
It's in real time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So wait, hang on a second. So that's interesting. And it has me understand Braxton a bit more in terms of, so you could totally be a derelict and be like, I'm not doing it, or waiting for the last minute. You can totally not give a shit, right? Mm-hmm. And take the easy way out. Mm-hmm. And I think as a young person, like you all of a sudden have to get serious. So you have it's on you, like at a very mm-hmm. young age to get an mm-hmm. education.
To sort of manage your learning and manage your time and organize it without following.
I don't think
the group.
I would though. I think I'd be out fishing or playing soccer or like.
But you know what? Here's what and correct me if I'm wrong, Braxton. When you break down, especially in like elementary school, if you break down the time that is spent just with teachers corralling all the kids and taking them to the next class and supervising mm-hmm. recess and getting like you don't actually spend that many hours doing mm-hmm. actual learning. It's all like lining up and going to lunch and going to the next class and settling down at your desks and whatnot.
Fair,
right.
Fair. Yep.
So you probably had more time to do things that were interesting personally to you, even as a child then. Right, Braxton? Mm-hmm.
I did. I was very inventive as a young kid. And so, like, and that's a great point, is at most, I would probably do homework for 3 hours a day at that age, at most. And then all my free time was spent, you know, Mark brought up, I'd be out fishing or playing soccer. And my argument to that is there's nothing wrong with that. One of the kids that I knew as I got a little bit older, I think junior high age, I got to know a kid through homeschooling. He was more or less homeschooled as well. He did something called unschooling, which, you know, everyone can look that up. It's a different concept, but I think it's effective to some extent. He went to an unschooling school, which sounds, I think that's what it was. I don't know what it was, but he participated in some program that was some unschooling program. And that's what he largely did. Any free time he had, any time at all, he would go fishing himself. And when left to his own devices, with some structure in some ways, different structure, but some structure, when that kid spent the majority of his time fishing, he still ended up going to MIT.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is that a true story?
It is. It's a kid I knew personally.
That's amazing.
I don't get that. Mm-hmm. I don't get that.
Yeah.
But I don't get
it.
Those
are the kind of conventions that I'm talking about, is like with very little of school is actually to educate our future leaders, our children.
And there are some kids who are wired in such a way where if given the extra time and given a structure and maybe given some general parameters around what you would mm-hmm. do, they will find their passion, I believe.
Christine, what
exactly.
What are these schools they have here in the Northeast? They probably have them everywhere. They go by name. They learn untraditionally. They learn through like projects.
Are you thinking like Montessori or something
yes,
like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Montessori is a school that teaches learning
by doing.
Yep. Exactly.
When we were exploring schools when our kids were young, we were looking at Montessori. I don't know why we didn't go in that route, but maybe it was probably me thinking, I don't know, they should be in class and, you know, blah, 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 because I didn't know any better.
So one of my kids did Montessori and it was Celia. And Henry went the more traditional sort of, you know, preschool route. But Montessori is a really, really interesting sort of methodology and educational philosophy. It's pretty cool. And Maria Montessori actually designed a program that took you from toddlerhood right through to the end of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, this is not an educational program.
Back to B, Braxton.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. So I did homeschool, and I got to do a lot of this. Not having someone to tell me what's important or what I should be doing. Should is one of the most evil words in our language, I think. Should. Woulda, yes. Coulda, shoulda, right?
Yep.
So not having to be told what to do, I was left to my own devices, not in a bad way at all. My mom was like, hey, you want to learn a language? And so she gave me a bunch of different options, and I'm like 12 years, maybe 13 years old. I'm like, sure. And then I had to think about it, and she's like, okay, well, which one do you want to pick? And I don't even remember exactly why, and maybe this was from a little bit of encouragement from her, but I studied Latin for 3 years.
Really?
Yep. And when I would tell my friends that were taking German or Spanish or French in junior high, they're like, that's stupid. It's a dead language.
Yeah, it's a dead language. Why would you want that,
Braxton? It's the root of all languages.
Yes, it is.
E pluribus umen, my brother. E pluribus umen.
Exactly. Yep, that's exactly why I did it. Is I found it now, and I don't know any language perfectly, and I can't speak Latin hardly at all anymore. But I can recognize it and see common threads through Italian, Spanish,
French,
English,
even.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, yep, French even. And it's interesting for me to be able to recognize certain terms in the all the gender and all that type of stuff in language. So that, and has it served me a lot? No. But has language, studying German in high school or whatever, helped serve anyone else any better?
Probably
like
not.
That's the kind of, that's the way I look at it. It's like,
yeah.
But I can at least recognize, and I, when I hear, when I'm walking down the street and I see someone speaking Spanish, I can pick up on certain things. And it's really cool to be able to do that and then talk to my buddy who served his mission in France to kind of get what he's talking about too.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. So that was just one example. But I was a very, when I was a kid, I always had this itch to do something. Like, and I wasn't a normal kid. Like, the reason why I read through school books and I was accountable to myself was because even at 12 years old, I was really conscious that I didn't want to screw my life up. And one way I could do that was pretending to be like a dropout and just coast through even homeschooling. And I didn't want to do that. So I did, without much pressure from my mom at all, I did my homework every day. I read from books every day, all that kind of stuff. But I still had this itch that I, like, just this craving almost to do something and have this outlet. And I never knew what it was when I was a kid. And some of the ways that I would fulfill on that, like, I remember when I was 12 years old, I was given, this is going to be a really silly example, but just to give you an idea of, like, the kind of kid I was, when I was 12 years old, I was given a CD stereo as a birthday present, or yep, a Christmas present, I think. And I'm the kind of person, I cannot sleep unless it's pitch black. But mm-hmm. Suddenly, like, it has to be pitch black in my room. And this new stereo
that
I got.
Close your eyes, dude. Try closing your eyes. It'll be pitch black.
I must have thin eyelids or something like that, because if it's not pitch black, I cannot sleep. But I had this brand new stereo that was my favorite gift as a kid, but the darn light on it was so bright. And so
I get it.
I rigged this contraption where from my bed, I had a string that ran up the wall, along the ceiling, and down to my stereo, where it was attached to a flap of cardboard with a weight on it.
Oh my God.
And so as a kid, I could pull up and down on the thing when I wanted to lift this light, lift the thing off the stereo so I could see the light and use my remote on it or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's crazy. Okay.
Creative genius. Yeah.
So Braxton, the first question that came to mind as you start telling me about the kind of student you are and the creativity that was born throughout your homeschooling, and how, like, you studied Latin and you didn't want to, you wanted to make sure that you succeeded in life, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The first question I would ask is, so Braxton, where'd you go to college?
So we're jumping the gun a little bit here, but I'm happy to entertain that. But
Wait,
let's not jump the gun, because
okay,
I'm going to get into
okay
trouble.
I'm already giving her side eye, bro.
Yes.
B, I'm on your side, B. I'm on your side, kid.
All right.
Continue, sir.
Okay. Yeah, so you kind of heard how homeschooling started for me. So how it progressed was, it was during that period, I was 15 years old. That's when I moved to the Phoenix area.
Okay.
And I moved there during the summer, which was really interesting and something that I think was a blessing to me in some ways, because I did not have a lot of friends in growing up in Utah as a homeschool kid. And I would like to think it's because I don't think I matched the stereotype. It didn't match the stigma.
Yep.
But the stigma was very prevalent. So when Mark had asked, you know, did it affect you in any way, it did affect me, not like internally, not as a kid. Like, I don't think I was disadvantaged in any way.
Yep.
Other than the fact that how other people perceive me without getting to know me. just because of the stereotype. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So for that reason, I had one best friend growing up when I was a kid, and we had a great time. And, you know, I mean, how many of us keep in touch with most of our childhood friends or high school friends anyway, right?
I too have one best friend. Shout out to Dave. Yes. I've known Dave like 50 years. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then I moved to Phoenix during the summer because my dad got a better job. So we moved to Phoenix from Utah. And I moved there in the summer. And what was interesting and something I recognize looking back is moving there in the summer was probably the best thing that could have happened to me in terms of what the situation was like before, because kids got to know me first before the topic of school even came up. They didn't know I was homeschooled. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so I'm going to, like, we would do, in my church, we have early morning seminary. So you would, it's basically Bible study for high school kids.
Yep.
And we would attend that before regular school hours start. So I made a lot of friends through that early in the morning. Then they go off to school. And by that time, after living there for about a year, I got a job where I was working almost full time, which was awesome because I had more money than any of my friends at the time.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. Because I was able to work full time.
But hang on. Were your friends like, hey, B, how come I didn't see you in Mrs. Smith's class? Or how come I didn't see you in Mr. Jones's class? Hey, did you do that English homework? Did you? Hey, did you do that math test? So when did that come up?
I think when the school year started and I started attending that early morning seminary, it then became pertinent, and then that's when kids found out. But by that point, they had 3 months to get to know me first before it was even, you know what I mean?
Right.
Fair.
So
not only
would you not have to go to school, but you were working full time, you had a job, and you had money. So you suddenly were like the cool kid.
In some way, I would like to think that. in some ways, I was one of the first. It was so funny. I was one of the first kids in my circle of friends to get a car, which was really funny.
Nice.
And,
did you have nice clothes? Did you have like a nice leather jacket? Did you have like nice shoes and stuff like that? And all your friends were
See, I wasn't that cool. Like I was, I come from a family that is, my perspective on the world and career development and things like that is very different than my upbringing and what I saw of my parents.
Can I ask what your parents did? Like, did you said your mom didn't teach you? Right.
She didn't.
Mm-hmm. But like, what was their occupations that have created the person you are today? And I think, your story is great. Like, we're affected by our surroundings. So what was
their background?
Yeah. That helped you develop who you are, today.
Yeah. So my mom, she was a cosmetologist. She did hair.
Okay.
And in fact, by the time, I think she graduated, even when she was pregnant with me, possibly. I don't remember the exact timeline, but she was cutting hair by the time she was pregnant with me, she was cutting hair part time.
Okay.
So she did that. And then my dad's more or less a very blue collar type worker. So for the first decade of my life, a little bit beyond that, he worked for a paint manufacturing company right there in Salt Lake City. And then he did garage doors. So he was the guy that would show up and install garage doors if you bought one. And he did that for 12 years. He also did things like cabinets and kind of a handyman contractor kind of work was what my dad did. Yep.
Cool.
But your path, and I'm not going to blow it up, but your path is way different. You're not a disruptor. You're not a blue collar guy. Right, you come from a blue collar background, your family, but that's not what you do. Was it just like, listen, we have to use our gifts, right?
Yep.
I use my hands for typing, right? Like I cannot build a thing, right? I get major anxiety when someone puts a tool in my hand. Like I'm like, Jesus, what the hell do I even do with this? And as a matter of fact, just yesterday, my 77-year-old neighbor put up all my window treatments for me. Literally, we've become good friends, and I'm like, "Hey, you gonna help me out with these window treatments?" He's like, "Yeah, you gonna help?" I'm like, "Dude, you know I can't do nothing. I can't do anything with my hands." So, dude, he's 77. He's in my house, and he had like 9 window treatments up in like an hour. Right. And I'm looking at him, dude. I'm like, how do you even know, like, which end of the screwdriver to use? He's like, you're being silly, right? I'm like, well, yeah, but.
Not really.
Yeah. So I the reason why I'm going into this is I think at some point early, you identify what your strengths are. And your strength mm-hmm. is obviously your intellect, right? And what you give is what you receive, right? And mm-hmm. your education has made you who you are today in terms of what it mm-hmm. is you do professionally, which is like polar kind of not polar opposites, but you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it's interesting how this is your chosen line of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so now you have to go there.
Okay, and I can go there. And yes. I love this.
All right, go.
So me being that self-directed kid, kind of a free-range kid to a large extent, if the blessing it was for me and where most people think it's a disadvantage is it created, I was able to live my life and grow up in a world without bias because I didn't have the majority of people telling me how the world works, telling me how education works, telling me how the job market works, how society works. I had my own experiences to dictate and give me the impression rather than someone try and tell me or educate me on how it works. And that is kind of the inspiration behind my and the almost the philosophy behind my career coaching company is that there where so many people are living their lives with blinders on and they don't realize it. And so that's what I really do in career coaching is help people really understand and recognize the blinders. And go through a process of like self-discovery where they realize they're capable of more. There's more they have to offer, and that there's more opportunity out in the world than what all these biases have dictated to them for so long.
All right, I got a question, man. I'm going to say it, but I don't mean it in a derogatory way. Are we saying that ignorance is bliss? Meaning, so if you are already setting yourself up for failure because you've been educated and you know what the potential pitfalls are, right? Mm-hmm. And you're already holding that within you as an anchor so you don't get ahead. You're like, oh, if I don't do it this way, then it's never going to happen because this is what society expects, so on and so forth. So mm-hmm. if you're saying I don't adhere to that philosophy because I didn't
grow up with those biases, right?
Correct. Yep. Mm-hmm. So are you saying less bias is better than more bias? I mean,
I think for Braxton it was, right? I mean, mm-hmm. maybe that's not the case for everybody, but I think that's a fascinating way, right? Because most kids are socialized to believe things to be a certain way, even about mm-hmm. life, even by way yep. of osmosis, right? Like just stuff that you may hear, or my dad does this, or my mom did this, or and to not necessarily be part of the sort of listening of that chatter and not necessarily getting that probably allowed for you to find bliss in ignorance if you use Mark's analogy, right? That's
yeah.
very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in a way, the way I look at it is I think we create too much structure and kids never, I posted a video on my content not too long ago about this. We always say we want the best for our kids, but in a lot of ways, we're subjecting them to a lot of external influences that influence how they can potentially be their best selves, right?
Agreed.
But we see in their potential. Mm-hmm. And so the way I look at it is, and again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, kids need an opportunity to explore mm-hmm. and to express themselves in order to discover what their interests are. But I'm pretty vehemently opposed to the notion that sitting them in a classroom is the way to help them discover that.
Yes.
For, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I think there has to be balance. Like, so I don't know. I'm obviously not as opposed to it as you are because that's how we were raised and grown up in the paths we've taken. But I am a big believer in balance. I am mm-hmm. a big believer that you have to be exposed to things, right? And exposed mm-hmm. to situations, and you have to fail a lot, right?
Yep.
And you have to learn from your failures. And if we as parents have done our jobs right, when you send your kids off to wherever, you know, you cross your fingers, like, all right, did my best, make the right choices, right? So,
mm-hmm. yep.
Listen, I think the perspective of not knowing what's going to hurt you because you're not familiar with it is interesting, and it becomes less biased and you become less afraid. Mm-hmm. But I think there also has to be that balance in that kid, right?
Sure.
And that mind that you're, you know, structuring, right?
Yep. So, and there's two things I would say to that. So the first thing that I believe me, like, and this is something I haven't said yet, but this message that I share with people, my content has gotten over 180 million views.
Wait, what?
On this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
180 million.
Correct.
Wait, Braxton, share your content. What URL? Where do people go?
That's largely my TikTok.
Wait, you have 180 million views on your TikTok?
Correct.
That's amazing.
Hang the fuck up. Hang on. What? Dude, you're like Mr. Yeah. Beast. You're
okay,
like...
so what is it? Braxton Wood?
If you search my name on TikTok, I say this not trying to sound, this is going to sound so arrogant, and I don't intend. If you search my name, I would imagine I would pop up pretty easily. But my handle is Work for Real. If you searched for that, then I would definitely pop up.
Wait,
okay, Braxton, so you just opened up a whole nother topic. All right, so none of my business, but you should be monetizing that.
I'm sure he is.
Are you monetizing?
To some extent, I am. Mm-hmm.
To the fullest extent, you should be, my friend. I mean,
Well, becoming a content creator in an influencer was not in the plan, and so I'm learning as I go
get,
a little bit.
Listen, I get it. Sometimes you fall in, air quotes, fall into something. Mm-hmm. But Braxton, like that is a huge amount of followers, right?
Uh-huh.
And yeah. When did that start? How long ago did it start?
Oh,
And it sounds like you just honestly fell into it and went viral immediately because you got the pulse of something, right?
There was a period where I could post a video and I could predictably get a million views to it in a couple of days.
That's crazy.
Dude.
Okay. So how did this start? Okay. So I need to understand how this even happens. Cause like you're not as old as we are, but like you're kind of old for TikTok. No?
No, he's not.
No. I think about content on TikTok and I think about the videos my kids watch. So how did this happen? How do you have 180 million views?
I found that this is where it's hard to have this conversation with talking about business. So I'm going to try and
be your business, dude. This should also be monetizing your TikTok. Another conversation.
It is. I okay. do. Yep. So the short story is I found a common thread. Like, really, what makes a video popular is it's entertaining. But there's when people think entertaining, usually where our brains go is, oh, you have to be funny. Mm-hmm. I, at least that's how it was for me. And yep. me getting on TikTok, that was my initial preconceived notion myself. That was my initial assumption. And I realized that there's, like, 20 different forms of entertainment. Karen videos are not always popular and viral because they're funny. It's because they're cringy, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
There's like Dude Perfect. They're not entertaining because they're funny. It's because they do something interesting and it's a challenge, right?
Love yep. those guys. So, how many views do they have, Dude Perfect? What do they got?
Oh, I don't. Yeah, plenty.
All right.
So what I stumbled upon, what I realized is I posted a certain type of content that was entertaining for a number of different reasons.
Okay.
It was relatable. It was cringy. It was a universal problem, like all these reasons. And in a nutshell, that's where the views initially came from. And then in that time, I've kind of been able to leverage the learning that I've had from that to replicate it.
Okay. So now you have to go back to how you decided to start producing this content and mm-hmm. how you came to the work that you do today.
Okay,
right?
So the
was there like a 0 hour? Like, was there like an aha moment where you were like, oh, shoot, this is my life's path. And now I'm going to produce content. And oh, my God, shit, we've gone viral.
In a way, yeah. So kind of to and we can unpack this as much as we need to, but to kind of summarize. So if you kind of fast forward through my high school years, I served my mission, came home, got married. I still didn't know what I wanted to do for a living until I was like 25. And so for that reason, to me, there was a period right before we got married where I was like, maybe I should go to college because that's what you're supposed to do, right? Even even being the homeschool kid that previously didn't have any of those like worldviews, those stories told to me, that was something I was thinking because everyone else was doing it, right? But to me, it felt almost wrong. Like internally, it didn't feel right to me to go to college when I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I didn't want to spend a valuable resource, which was my time,
doing something
when I wasn't in money. Yep, in tuition and all that stuff, right? So I didn't want to make that investment in so many different areas unless I was sure what I wanted to do. So for that reason, I didn't go to college. And instead, what I did was I floundered around in the job market for 4 or 5 years, trying to figure out what it was I wanted to do. So when we got right before we got married, I got a job working in collections, and I took that job not even realizing what it was, but it turned out I was really good at it, even though I don't like being good at it, and I hated every moment of that job. Bounced around a lot of jobs. I worked for a credit union. I worked in the oil field. I worked in, what else did I do? Jobs like that, basically. I spent a 1 month at a international office supply company. They sold printers and digital cameras and things like that. But I bounced around all those jobs over the period of roughly 4 or 5 years. And it was when I was working in the oil field that I started a side hustle. And my wife would tell you, there was a period where I was obsessed with photography in every way. And so I bought a camera. I would shoot portraits of people. I did a little bit of commercial work for local restaurants, some national restaurants and chains and things like that. And I realized that me being a homeschool kid, one of my personality traits is I actually don't like working with the general public, with people too much, if I'm being honest. And in running that side hustle, doing the photography, I realized that I liked trying to promote the photography business more than I did actually doing the art in the pictures. That was the initial aha moment of, oh, Braxton is interested in marketing. And I said a moment earlier that as a kid, I always had this itch to try and create, do something, and I never figured it out. Yep. When I was a kid, I used to go to the library. I loved libraries as a kid. Go figure, homeschool kid, whatever.
Yep.
But I would go to even as a teenager, I would drive down the library, and I would just walk all the stacks. Because I felt like I had this itch for something, and I wanted to read a book about it. Never knew what it was, but as a teenager, that was like a ritual I would go through.
Wow. Like it was. Russell Crowe in The Beautiful Mind, writing on the window in the library.
I love that book. I love that movie.
Yes.
Yeah, that is me. Like I think in some ways I'm probably neurodivergent. I'm probably like idiosyncratic in some ways. So that was myself as a kid. So fast forward, I have this aha moment. Braxton loves marketing, and all of a sudden, everything fell into place. It's like, that's really? What I spent weekend after weekend after weekend walking around the library trying to figure out what on earth it was that I wanted to do as a kid. Is I wanted to create something, and my outlet was marketing. It was, you know, building something worth promoting and that type of thing. That's when I figured it out. And here I am, 23, 24, 25, somewhere around there. I don't remember. And so then when I realized that, and this is really when I kind of took the path that was my experience in the material for what I do in my career coaching company now.
Okay.
So basically, long story short, what I learned is that where most people want to believe that the job market values that education and the degree that people go to college, go to school and get a good job, where we are conditioned to think that tends to be the case, my experience says that what the job market really values is merit, is results. Show a company, an employer, how you have merit in what you're doing and how you get results. And if you can do that better than anyone else, and I'm not saying there's not a place for a degree. Like, I don't want to bash on that.
Yep.
My whole point, my whole point in my message and what I do in my career coaching is just to help people understand, and especially in my content, I talk about this a lot. What I really will spend my life trying to help people understand is that it's just that college isn't the only option, whereas that's what most people think. You know what I mean? So me deciding on marketing, I bought every book that I could think of, every course, and YouTube was barely a thing back then. And so, like, every YouTube video I can get my hands on, every course, every book, I just ate it all up. And I just became more obsessed with it. And that's when I was, like, willing to completely ditch the photography thing. When I started practicing marketing, and I did it very much, I was working a crummy job that I didn't like. I was working in the oil field is where it started. I'm working nights in the middle of the Rockies, 14-hour shift, all alone by myself. And, like, I'm like, I want to do marketing, so let's figure this out. So what I would do is I would read these books, and I would go into the community and offer just little services. Let me design your business card. Let me build you a simple blog. Let me build you a simple website. Let me spend an hour teaching you about marketing. And I did all these just little gigs. And all the experience I built from that. So the first step was I learned from a credible source on the topic. I put it into practice. I gained experience on it. And I slapped all that experience on my resume. Me being someone that previously didn't go to school for it, was completely self-taught in it, and had no other experience, that was enough for me to get into a 600-person tech company that required a bachelor's degree.
Wow.
Interesting. That is interesting. Yeah.
And so that's when I realized, okay, do some companies, and in the years that I've been doing this career coaching business since then, I've brought on two dozen different recruiting and hiring partners. I have friends that are headhunters, things like that. And this is something that all confirmed to me is a lot of jobs, not all of them, but a lot of them, the majority of them, most companies require a degree as an arbitrary method to try and improve their candidate pool. Because we all know that people will just go down the list on Indeed or something and just spam their resume to every job they see, right?
Yes. Yep.
So requiring a degree is their way of mitigating that a little bit. Yes. But what I've discovered and what I teach people in my program is if you can make your resume, for example, if you can present yourself as a higher quality candidate than the other candidates, it's just a numbers game. It's just a competition. And so you just need to shine better than anyone else. And the degree, maybe there's some merit to it. But what I've found, I review hundreds of resumes every year, and I get what I've discovered is, on average, a resume is roughly a 30% match for the job. So,
really?
And that's with, correct, yep.
30% with, match.
That's probably right, yeah.
Resume writing is something that this almost isn't hyperbole. Resume writing is something that almost everyone gets wrong across in society, is what I've discovered.
Gets wrong how? Like, writes the wrong...
They don't understand what the purpose of a resume is. They don't understand that, like job hunting and applying to jobs, it's a numbers game, right? And this is something I teach all my clients, right? What does a business owner, an investor, a pickup artist, an entrepreneur, and a job seeker, what do all these kind of people have? Their craft is a numbers game. It's all the same thing, right? And so, but most people don't look at the job market that way. They don't look at it as a competition, but if we live in a capitalist society, and that's how these businesses work, these businesses are competing with each other. It's not any different when you're competing for a job, but most people don't realize that. So all you have to do is make yourself clearly the better candidate, and your resume is a primary tool to do it. Your resume is just a marketing tool for yourself. That's all it is.
Great.
But most people don't understand that.
So tell us a little bit about how you work with somebody and what your traditional, I mean, you're a non-traditional guy, so I don't know if there is something that's traditional, right? Like, when you think about the kinds of clients that you have, are there common threads? Like, do they, like you, tend to be a disruptor or a non-traditional candidate who comes to you? Or do you have people that you work with of all kinds And do you see yourself only as a career coach, or do you see yourself also as an executive coach who allows for that person, once they're in a job, to sort of push towards goals?
Yeah, it's a mix. So the people that come to me, some have degrees, some don't. And very often, actually, most of people do have degrees because, again, that they just did what you're supposed to do, right?
Yep, yep.
But what I found, there's so many stories I could tell about this. But, yeah, it's a mix. I mean, I'm working with a veteran that was in the Navy for 20 years. Another client I have, he's roughly my age, and he's been in sales for most of his career. He's looking to make a pivot. I had a client he was a vice president for in a certain department at Reddit. I had another vice president that was a vice president at Coinbase. Like, these are some of the, so there's a wide range of people I work with. I certainly don't work with everyone, because first you have to be coachable and teachable, because if you're not, I'm going to challenge everything that people believe coming into the coaching arrangement. I challenge everything.
Interesting.
And so what that looks like is I tend to spend the first 2 to 3 hours with people working on their mindset and really breaking down all those false notions of what they've been told to believe about the job market, about society, about working, about career development, all that type of stuff.
Man, you would have a field day with me, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you would just have field day, right? Jesus. So it's like, I'm not speechless, but you are, dude. I started off by saying you're the 1% before even knowing who the hell you were and what it is you do and the content you write. I imagine, though, not everyone is, you know, let's get back to the ICP, your ideal customer profile, right?
Uh-huh.
I imagine that hang on a second. So if I'm a highly educated executive, B school, so on and so forth, maybe I'm tired of that perspective. Maybe I'm tired of that institution, and maybe I need a refresh, right?
Yep.
And maybe I need a guy like Braxton Wood's perspective, right? Because look what I've done, and I'm still young, and I'm still doing it. And guess who's sitting across from me right now, sir? It's you. You went to MIT. You did this. You did that. And listen, I think I'm not going to quote him exactly. Didn't Elon Musk say something about the lack of importance of a formal education, of a college education, and that he didn't want necessarily advise his kids to go that route. And you just need to have your wits about you and to be smart, right?
Yep.
Again, it's not for everyone. And I think, and I'm guilty of it, we fall into the trap. The trap is high school, college, job, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, then you fucking go on your merry way. Because I'll be honest with you, Braxton, if any one of my kids decided that they didn't want to go to college, I would side-eye them. I'd be like, no, you have to go to college. And, you know, you would say to me, but why do they have to go to college? So I have one daughter who wants to be a plumber, right? And a female, you know, female-owned business, which I think is friggin' amazing. And her mom and I said, okay, we want you to follow that. We want you to do that, but we want you to learn how to run your own business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was our rationale for wanting her to go to school so she can have the paper, right? And the paper says maybe to a bank, I'm at a risky bet, right? Or I'm less risky than the next person. So, dude, this is Americana, right? This is what is ingrained in us, the majority. You're definitely in a minority, the majority of us, on the pathway we should be taking. So, listen, you said it yourself where you're like, dude, I challenge a lot. And you should be, because your path is different, right? And and in your challenging, you're seeing if people are, and you said it yourself again, open to being coached, right? Like, I've always been open to learning a different way, a smarter way of doing something, right? But I think it's interesting that, you know,
the people you are coaching might be entirely different from you, right? And mm-hmm. yep. I think that's helpful for both of you to see the other person's perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot I could say about that. So the one thing that I say very often, this is one of the things, believe me when I say in my content, I get plenty of backlash, tons. And so one of the things that I get a lot of backlash on is when I say, what does college really have any exclusivity on?
I could probably start to answer that. It has exclusivity, you know, so all right, let's talk about the type of college. So if you go to like an Ivy League, the perception mm-hmm. is there's a lot of perception, right? Mm-hmm. In the job market, there's lots of companies that only want to hire from an Ivy, right? Mm-hmm. And some perception is reality that an Ivy degree, an MIT degree, will get you your first job out of college making six figures, like mid-six, mm-hmm. 150, 200, $175, whatever that is. Like what it gets you is potentially some financial release, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a direction in a career.
Okay, but mm-hmm. and I work in the space, right? Like my job is helping students leverage the best possible opportunities to attend the best fit college for them. And to some of the families that I work with, that also equates to the best possible, the highest level college, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I would say that having spent my whole entire professional life in education doing just that and watching the change, like from when we were kids going to school where we literally had to memorize and spit out information, right, to now being in a space where I feel like the purpose of education is to help students access the information that is already out there,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth $500,000 to send our kids to a high-level Ivy League college in order to basically acquire information that they might be able to access online? I don't know. I am having a crisis of conscience with that.
Yeah, and that's why I always say is, again, not trying to dog on college or the institution at all, right? What I said earlier was is it's just not the only option. So
right.
A lot of this boils down to students and maybe even their parents and their goals. If the goal is to have a high-paying, lucrative job, and that's the primary goal in a field that you like, I would argue college isn't necessary for that. For the majority of professions, there's obviously exceptions,
right.
But I believe for the majority of professions, that's the case. If that's the goal, college is not necessary. And that's kind of where I come from. And I find it interesting, Christine, you use the term, and this is something that this is one of the things I kind of challenge, is you use the term, is going to college and spending $500,000 in this school to get an education worth it? And the operative term there is education. We so often in our society conflate the definition of education and schooling, and they're not the same thing.
Correct. You're right.
You know what I mean?
Yes, you're right.
And so that's one of the biggest things that I will shout from the rooftops is I had a very, very fulfilling, interesting, amazing
education,
but I didn't go to school for it. It wasn't necessary. And
well,
that's
school
the thing,
of life,
that's
though.
The
isn't the school of life, you know?
But he also read everything that's out there on his field, right? So maybe he
1%.
Got a quote-unquote better education, if you think about it, than a lot of kids who end up going to the Ivies. But yes,
I think
he is the 1%.
I think Braxton is wired differently. I think you look at the world differently. And I think that has a lot to do with how you were raised. So mm-hmm. there's a cycle, right? The mm-hmm. the cycle in my family was ding, 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 ding. You follow the process, right? You go, you know, and it's a no thought process. Like you go to college after high school, and then you get a job,
mm-hmm.
and then you're miserable for the rest of your life, and then you get married,
exactly.
and then you have kids, right? You know, like, it's okay not to follow that path. It's just not the norm, right? And
it's not.
You know, Listen, B, I've said it 100 times. Like, you are the 1%, and not everyone can grasp onto that. And also, I've been thinking about this. So I think, dude, when we're 17, 18 years old and we're making choices about life, right? Mm-hmm. And these choices about life are where to go to school, what our interests are. I don't think, dude, A, your brain isn't fully developed yet at 18, even though you think
exactly.
It is.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Medically, it's 20, right? 21, 22, mm-hmm. Your brain's fully developed. And I really don't think you know where you're going. My daughter's just like, oh, I want to go to University of Miami because, A, it's warm. All right, that's rational. And, B, it's far away from you, too. You know, it's far away from myself and my ex-wife, right? So, and that's, you shouldn't be making a decision on an $80,000 a year school based on warmth and distance from parents,
yes,
right?
Yes, correct.
So, like, a lot of me agrees on, go to college if you so choose when it feels right.
Yes.
Like, don't rush it. But I think a human consensus will be like, well, if I'm 5 years out of high school and I haven't gone to college yet, then I'm already in this shitty job. I might as well continue with this shitty job and not because I missed my boat. Is that what they would think? I don't know. It's, perspective.
This is something that I've observed. I don't have any data or statistics. Well, there's some statistics on this, but largely this is an observation I've made. Is there's a lot of statistics that say and make the argument that people that tend to go to college tend to be more successful in life or more have a better job or whatever, right? And there's some merit to that. But what I have never seen a statistic on, and maybe there is something, what I've never seen someone have the conversation of is what happens for the people that don't go to college. And what I found, again, an observation, is that we spend 12 years in school with a lot of structure. And suddenly, 18 years old, we graduate, and the world's our oyster, so to speak, because there's no more structure. And, like, boom, overnight, it's time to be an adult now. And without that structure, we tend to default because we don't have another option. And we can make the argument how true that is or not, but I think that's the way a lot of people...
I'm nodding my head in agreement, dude. Yeah. I'm nodding my head in agreement. Yeah.
So I think that's without realizing, almost subconsciously, a lot of kids come out of high school and they just default to something because there's no direction, no structure for something else. And so those statistics, what I think they're missing out on is the people... when those statistics report on people that do not go to college, I've never seen anyone measure is what do the kids do differently or alternatively, right? Usually they just get the job they find. That's what, like, without any direction or structure or guidance or something to default to, we tend to just post in place where we are, right?
Yes.
But what if the kids at that age went and did something different? And so that's kind of, in a way, like, I'm catching these people 5, 10, 20 years down the road later. They're miserable. They've hit a plateau in their career doing something they don't even love or appreciate. Because of that activity they defaulted to, right?
And now now they've opened their eyes 20 years later and need direction because they're like, holy shit, I defaulted, right? Just like most of America does. We default. And they're unhappy. And you're there to kind of to dig, right, and help.
Okay. And we're running out of time.
All
like we're actually a little over time, Braxton, and I know you've got a family. Here's my question that I'm just going to throw out there, and I hope that you will plan to come back and continue this conversation with us.
Okay.
My question is, do you work with people who are young? Like, you talk about the default process and how you catch people 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down. What if everybody, as they got ready to graduate from high school, had a Braxton?
Mm-hmm. I've tried that because I live in a college town. My business is based in a college town. And I thought, when I first started this business, I was like, I'm going to help all these college kids and I'm going to completely change their lives before they even realize it. And that was the problem, is these kids are too young and they've been told a story for long enough that they haven't fallen on their face enough in life to realize they need the information. And so when I tell them this story and tell them my experience and how you don't need to spend 20 grand a year to go to college if you want to be in something like marketing or design or whatever it is, I tell them the story, but it completely contradicts and is a conflict with the thing that they've been told for the first 18 years of their life.
You're totally right. And 100%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, yeah. 100%.
It doesn't work.
Dude, I'm taking the next flight out to Idaho. I'm going to hang out with my new bestie, B, right? And we're gonna continue the conversation. Dude, this was amazing. Thank you.
Braxton, yeah, thank what you. Do we need to do to make sure that our listeners get to contact you, ask you questions? I know that you have a very active TikTok presence, but besides TikTok, are you also on Instagram?
Website.
I am on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Yep, I have a website. So if you go to BraxtonWood.VIP, that's okay. Where all my business is linked, my socials are linked. You can get in touch with me a number of ways there.
Excellent. Braxton Wood, BraxtonWood.VIP. You are a VIP. Thank you for joining us
Hell
today.
Hell yeah, Braxton Wood.
Thank you,
Hell
guys.
Yeah, my man. Pleasure talking to you. Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for running over on time.
Yeah, absolutely, guys.
All
Thank
right,
you.
Brother. All right, cool.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. BraxtonWood.VIP up in this house. Peace.
Peace. Thank you, Braxton.
Thanks, brother.